My name is Jan Stase. I'm going to present our work about static detection of second-order vulnerabilities in web applications, a research topic covered by Thorsten Holst and myself at the beginning of the year. And before we jump into our implementation details and how we want to detect those vulnerabilities statically with static code analysis, we are explaining what second-order vulnerabilities are. So most of you probably know what first-order vulnerabilities are, and these are the vulnerabilities where a lot of research is put on. So for example, SQL injections, they follow the same concept as all other first-order vulnerabilities. So we always have some user input that is embedded into some markup. Here it's a SQL query, and then it ends in a sensitive sync, the SQL, the MySQL query function. And then the application chokes on this specially crafted input, you can say, like it causes some harm. So the attacker sends this payload, and in the first step, in the first order, the application does something malicious then. In order to prevent that, developers get a bit more aware. They apply initialization. So in this example, we apply escaping. We cannot break out of the SQL query anymore because we escaped the single quotes. And then the application is safe against SQL injection. But this is usually the point where the developer stops thinking, because we have no SQL injection anymore, but it is important to note for this particular code snippet that the payload is not really diffused. It is still reachable for the application, because what it does, it stores the payload into a database. So we have an insert query, as you can see, and it stores the supplied username into the table users. Another problem is if the application reads this payload again from the database on a later point, then it can cause harm again in the second order. For example, here we have a persistent cross-site scripting vulnerability because the username is read from the table and is outputted to the user again. So this is the general concept of second-order vulnerabilities. We also want to introduce what multi-step exploits are. Multi-step exploits, so that's the name how we call them, are like a subcategory of second-order vulnerabilities. And here we use a first-order vulnerability to spread our payload more. So in a second-order vulnerability, the first step is always to write your payload somewhere, and this can be by application design. And in a multi-step exploit, you use a first-order vulnerability to escalate that a bit more. So if we have a SQL injection here, we can not only taint the column username, but also the second column of this query, namely the password column, and any up following columns in the SQL query. So the attacker now sent this payload, exploited the SQL injection, and could spread his payload into the database. And if the application on the later point reads from one of those columns, specifically if the developer assumes that in this column can only be static contact or a hash password, which can usually not cause any damage, then we have another critical vulnerability. So that's the concept how it works. We always have user input. It is stored in some persistent data store that cannot be only databases. We also focus on files, file names, to be more precise, or the session data the application uses, which is by default file content. And then the payload continues flowing from this persistent data store in the second step into a sensitive operation of the application. So we saw a username getting posted, stored in the database, and echoed back, and then we had a second-order cross-site scripting, also called persistent cross-site scripting vulnerability. Okay, we want to detect these vulnerabilities statically with static code analysis. The problem here is that we don't have access to our environment. We do static code analysis, that means we only analyze the source code of the application, and we have to find a way to still recognize this data flow through some external devices. And what we do is we analyze the reads and writes of the application. I will show that in a second. And then at the end of our analysis, we can connect those input and output points and can decide if a vulnerability occurs or not. So we developed a prototype. We focus on the PHP language. It's the most popular scripting language on the web. And yeah, we want to take some source code, throw it into our prototype, and in the end, have some second order vulnerability reports. Okay, this is the concept how our first order taint analysis works. We introduced our prototype at the beginning of this year at the NDSS conference, and then briefly going into how we usually detect first order vulnerabilities and then what we added to detect second order vulnerabilities. So we take the source code, construct a control flow graph consisting out of basic blocks, and whenever in a basic block we analyze, if we find a sensitive sink, we analyze the sensitive sink for potential user input that could flow into the sensitive sink. So namely here we found a SQL function that executes a SQL query, and then we analyze the variables used or the arguments used in this function. So we trace them backwards to our basic blocks. And by doing that, we use a data symbol. We call it a data symbol. It's the delta you can see on the slide. It is just an abstract way of the data we are trying to resolve. And to this data symbol, we attach some text so we know about the sanitization status, the encoding status, and what have you. And once we found that we found user input, the argument could be resolved to user input, we issue a vulnerability report. So that is the typical way how you implement taint analysis for vulnerability detection. So what we do now, if we find escaping, then our first prototype would actually say, okay, we have no SQL injection vulnerability and nothing would happen. The new prototype, however, also analyzes if he's aware that he's analyzing a SQL execution, then he analyzes the SQL query and he would detect, okay, this is an insert query, so there's some writing of data going on, and he would analyze and find out the injection point, which is the first, the second column here, it's the username again. And then in our analyzer environment, we have a virtual table where we store the data symbol we found, which means we store this source that we found. So we can use this later on to not only decide if this if this column was actually taintable, but also we still know which data it was. The same for multi-step exploit. If we find a SQL injection, we issue a SQL injection vulnerability report, but we don't stop here. We also assume then that by the SQL injection in this insert query, you can taint the columns of this table, but only the columns, of course, which are in the field list after the injection happens. So as you can see here in the bottom, in the little table, we stored here the data symbols, and we save that we could taint these columns. Okay, that was the first step. We have to analyze the writings of the application, and now we analyze the readings of the application. That's the second step. So again, we just normally analyze our source code for application for vulnerabilities. And if you find a sensitive sink and trace, and while we resolve the argument, if we encounter that the data is not coming from user input or is not static, but is coming from a persistent data store, then we issue a temporary vulnerability report. Again, connected to the data symbol, which saves from this, which persistent data store the data is coming from, and of course the vulnerability type. So in the end, we find ourselves having lots of temporary vulnerability report, if we were successful, and we have what you can see on the right side, a list of taintable persistent data stores. And now we can connect these input and output points, and we can see, do we actually have a second order vulnerability? So we can check, is the column name of the table users, is it taintable? And is the data symbol not sanitized against the vulnerability type that occurred? And then we can issue a second order vulnerability report. We evaluated our approach against different types of applications. The first three are real-world applications. We chose OS Commerce and two, which is an e-commerce software, and HotCRP and OpenConf, which are two academic, well-known software in the academia, conference management systems. And we also choose three toy applications that are largely used in previous work. So we wanted to compare our results against previous work. Then we divided our evaluation in two steps because our prototype does two steps as well. And we first wanted to find out how many persistent data stores are used by those applications or by the applications we chose. And are they really taintable or not taintable? Taintable for us means we can inject certain markup characters that are needed for exploitation. For example, the single quotes or double quotes or whatever. And we found that 77% of the data stores are actually not taintable. So for example, if you have a column of type integer, you cannot taint this column. Or if it's sanitized by the application, if only static contact is written to that column, then it's not taintable as well. But 23% of those persistent data stores were taintable just by the concept of the application. So then we wanted to find out how good is our prototype? Does it detect these 23% of taintable persistent data stores? And our prototype detected 71% correctly, flagged them as taintable. And we also had 29% false negatives, which is the reason for that is mostly because we have to analyze, for example, SQL queries, but if the SQL query is constructed in a really complicated way with loops and for example, then it's really difficult to reconstruct those SQL queries with static code analysis, and then we would miss writings to these columns, for example. And we also had 6% false positives. I'll come to that in the next slide. So we added then, after we found out about the first step, we added a second step, the actual vulnerability detection. And we found 159 new vulnerabilities, which were missed by previous work. And 97% of these new vulnerabilities are persistent cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. Because an issue in an application occurs very often, the databases are the most common persistent data source we could see. So this was the most common vulnerability. But we also had some interesting vulnerabilities I will introduce shortly. We had a false discovery rate of 21%. The root cause was because our prototype does not support path sensitive sanitization. So for example, if only valid email addresses can be stored in the database and only then the specific path is taken if the email is valid, and then we did not detect that. And of course, if you do failures in the first step, they will propagate into the second step. But still, we found the false positive rate acceptable. We also evaluated our multi-step exploit report. Here we found 14 true positives, and they mainly based on SQL injections where you could escalate to taint more columns, or you could return more data in a select query. And those multi-step exploits were also missed in previous work. We also had a false positive. Of course, if you flag wrongly a SQL injection, then our prototype assumes more columns to be taintable than actually are. So let's have a look at an example. This is an example of OpenConf. So what OpenConf does, it has a table configuration, and in this configuration table, it stores its settings, and also at the beginning of each request, it calls the print header function that basically includes a header file. And this header file is coming from the database of this configuration table. And our prototype, the first step is not really a vulnerability itself. Our prototype detected that these settings can be arbitrarily changed by an administrator. So if you supply an OC header file as a setting you want to change, and you then can specify any arbitrary file you want to include, so you can change this setting. So our prototype issued a second order file inclusion vulnerability. Now, interestingly, it also issued some multi-step exploits connected to this second order vulnerability. Because our prototype found a file upload feature or vulnerability that is hard to decide, and also some SQL injection and cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. So if you connected all those vulnerabilities, our prototype found that you can actually, as a normal user, upload a file, for example, your paper you're submitting to the conference, but also you inject your PHP payload in this PDF file. If you then escalate your privileges to administrator by abusing a SQL injection or cross-site scripting vulnerability, you could use the second order file inclusion vulnerability to point the header file to your uploaded paper, which would end in including your paper at each request of the application. And because you injected your PHP payload into your paper, you would have a remote command execution vulnerability. So this example actually showed how complicated vulnerabilities can be, and how important it is to detect them. Okay, to conclude, we showed that the static detection of second order vulnerabilities is possible. We don't have access to the persistent data stores, we don't have access to this environment, but still we can collect the reads and writes and then connect these input and output points to detect if we have second order vulnerabilities or not. We found over 150 new vulnerabilities that were missed in previous work, and in the end we had remote command execution in USPRO, SCARF, OpenConf, and OS Commerce. So we believe that this is an overlooked problem in practice and needs improvement. So future work that is open is to support prepared statements. We are working on that. And also to improve our SQL parser, because our SQL parser is yet quite basic, but if it's having really really complicated SQL queries with a lot of subselects and SQL features, then it might have problems. Yeah, once again, we want to thank Facebook for the big award, and it will definitely help to improve our prototype and to improve the development process of this prototype. That's it. Thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So we have time for a few questions.
Yes, Ben. Ben Lifshitz, MSR. So we've had about 10 years of papers now on finding vulnerabilities in PHP code. Now, I'd argue that any system of sufficient size in PHP will probably have a handful of vulnerabilities at least. So I wonder if you have any lessons here for systems that are written in higher order languages, maybe Java or some such. What are your thoughts on that?
Thank you for the question. Difficult to say. I would say that PHP indeed is a problem for those vulnerabilities. I do see in applications in other languages by default being more secure. However, it is still possible to develop safe PHP applications, so I wouldn't just for the security change the language. I could not recommend any language better than PHP. It also always depends on what you want to do. So,
Marat, University of Tokyo. So what do you think about cleanly fixed point actually theorem, and that it's impossible to statically analyze island grammars inside of one language because, well, practically speaking, you can't write a parser of SQL unless you execute it dynamically. That's the problem. And the second problem is, since it's second order a vulnerability, so you have to converge actually two different semantics of, say, cross-site scripting is a HTML semantics, right? And then SQL injection, SQL semantics, and then find intersection of these two semantics, which is theoretically not possible. And second question is, what is like the most found SQL injection vulnerability of second order that I find myself in personal work is actually error-based cross-site scripting. Like when you launch SQL, SQL server complains that, okay, it's invalid SQL, and writes SQL self, and which produces cross-site scripting. So I assume that your tool doesn't detect this kind of vulnerabilities unless they're stored, right?
Okay, thank you for the questions. To the second question, we do have that too. A lot of vulnerability reports are, if I think that's what you meant, like reports where a SQL query could go wrong, and if that is the case, then the SQL query is printed back to the user as an error message. And you have a lot of false positive reports, because in the usual case, the SQL query would not fail, and only if it fails, then you would have a cross-scripting vulnerability. But the cross-scripting vulnerability is not as interesting because you would already have a SQL injection to break the query. If I understood you correctly, that was the problem you encountered. We had that too. What we did is we flag functions that are wrappers for those SQL queries. So in large applications, you don't execute a SQL query just directly with MySQL query. You have a wrapper function. And if we detect such a wrapper function, then we disable cross-site scripting reports for this wrapper function. So we don't have the problem that then this SQL wrapper function issues cross-site scripting vulnerabilities, which are not of our interest, because you can change that with a debug level if you want to have those reports or not. And yeah, then you would have to argue if it's a true positive or false positive. And the first question, you have to repeat again, sorry.
It's just clean a fixed point theorem. What do you think about it and how you want to approach it anyhow?
What do you mean by that?
You know, it's proven mathematically that it's impossible to parse statically languages for...
okay, like yeah, well, of course, we also have the problem with static code analysis. We cannot have... yeah, like 100% true positives and 0% false positives. We are struggling with the halting problem. And reconstructing all strings in applications is really difficult. We do our best to have the best trade-off, and using static code analysis as a tool to find them. Still, of course, you will get false positives no matter what. If we fix path sensitive sanitization, we will still have false positives, because we are using static code analysis. It's an interesting discussion, but maybe take them offline.
Okay, so that concludes the session. I want to thank Johannes again, our speakers.